Max Verstappen fends off a charging Lewis Hamilton to take a strategically aggressive but perfectly judged victory in Austin and double his points lead. This is the F1 Strategy Report. My name's Michael Laminato and welcome to Round 17, the United States Grand Prix, for Apex Race Manager, the mobile race simulator, downloaded for free for iOS and Android. Formula One's return to the United States didn't disappoint, with an unpredictable weekend from start to finish and a battle for victory that went down to the final lap. Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton started as favourites on the hot and bumpy circuit of the Americas, but changes on Friday night to compensate for the uneven surface pegged the car back, and gains made by Red Bull Racing put the title contenders neck and neck with Verstappen on pole. Hamilton nailed the start to take the lead, but he couldn't get the medium tyres working for him in the first stint, and after just 10 laps, Verstappen undercut his way past, and the Dutchman pulled for an early change again at the second stops to cement track position and force Hamilton into a chase. Mercedes went long to build a tyre offset, and with 5 laps to go, Hamilton was sizing up the lead. But with the best of his tyres gone and the dirty air difficult to manage, he couldn't get close enough to launch a move, and Verstappen ground out a well-judged victory. Did Mercedes miss its chance, or was Red Bull Racing always destined to win in Austin? To discuss the race, I'm joined by old friend of the show, freelance F1 journalist Abhishek Taklim. Abhishek, welcome back to the Strategy Report.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be back on. How is everything? How are things with you?
Very well. I mean, how can it not be when we've got such a title race on our hands? 5 races to go, which I was reminded this week actually is a quarter of the season, so maybe not as close to the end as it feels. But still, it feels like it's going down to the wire.
Yes, it is getting to the business end, isn't it? I mean, now every point swing, I think, has that much more significance because there's fewer races left for it to swing the other way.
Absolutely right. And we can't wait to see how it ends. We'll talk a little bit about the longer term championship picture a little bit later on. But I want to talk, of course, about the setup to this race in Austin, the United States Grand Prix, after 1 year absence. People were excited and up and about for it, not only because, I mean, people like going to Austin. It is a great track, one of the great modern tracks, I guess it's fair to say, in Formula One, but also because we had this weird and interesting race in Turkey a couple of weeks ago, a track that offers a similar kind of challenge to Austin, and Mercedes absolutely dominated there. And so the thinking was that maybe this could be a swing in the championship fortunes. That didn't end up being the case, though. It ended up being pretty even. Arguably, Red Bull had the fastest car over the balance of the weekend. Why do you think it was our expectations were so wide of the mark? Or is it simply just that it's so close we shouldn't expect anything anymore?
So yeah, I think this season, you know, when it comes to sort of favorite tracks and favorite teams at favorite tracks, it's not, the record's not quite held up as it has in the past. I mean, you look at Paul Ricard, which is a Mercedes track. They'd been unbeaten since the circuit came back on the calendar, but Red Bull beat them there. So that's certainly one of the things. The other thing is, I think in Turkey, the temperatures played a bigger role in helping Mercedes dominate the way they did. I think that the gap between Red Bull and Mercedes was sort of exaggerated by the temperatures there. And similarly in Austin, which was a hot race, that gap closed up. So I think it just swung from sort of one scenario to the other. And the biggest sort of change was the temperature, really. If you think about it.
Yeah, it was much hotter than expected this time of year. I know people probably think Texas and think heat, and I think it probably is relatively warm for most of the year. Don't live there. But it is normally cooler this time of year. Of course, we're in autumn in that part of the world. So temperatures above 30 degrees Celsius were a little bit unexpected. The track was pretty abrasive, and some might have expected that given around 40% of the track was resurfaced after 2019, when drivers complained a lot of the bumps, and some of the track was also ground down after MotoGP complained about the bumps earlier this year, in fact only about a month ago I think it was, that it would have presented a more smooth, more dependable track surface, I suppose, something more familiar to a lot of the new tracks we tend to race on, which tend to be very predictable in nature. But that absolutely wasn't the case. And I mean, should we be talking that much? I mean, the bumps definitely played a role, so we should be talking about the bumps, absolutely. But it felt like it was almost a novelty, whereas I feel like tracks should have some character, right? I enjoyed that it was part of the challenge.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, tracks should definitely have a character. Again, to compare Turkey, I mean, I loved last year's Turkish Grand Prix, where they were just sort of sliding all over the place. I mean, yes, it meant they were going far slower than they could, but ultimately it did test, it did prove to be a test of their skills, and that's what you want to see. You don't want to ultimately see the fastest lap time. You want to see a challenge. You want to see the best drivers in the world earning their money. And that's what you know, when the track has character, that's what it does. It tests you in its own unique way. So I definitely firmly believe a track should have character.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair enough to say. And I'm glad that the bumps will probably come back in Austin, if I understand. It's just because of where it's built, so they'll constantly be reappearing. And in different places, which is a nice novelty as well. It won't always be exactly the same bumps as they progressively try to fix them over time. What this also combined to do after practice on Friday was that everyone, of course, had to adjust to this challenge a little bit. The way that it started practice on Friday was not the way fundamentally first practice on Saturday ended up being, because of the changes that needed to be made overnight. One of the things that certainly Red Bull played a lot with setup, they talked about having Sebastian Buemi in the simulator and Milton Keynes. Mercedes raised its ride height because they were worried the bumps were going to destroy it. But one thing that didn't happen on Friday as a result of the heat in particular, because they could see it was going to be a two-stop race, is no one used the hard tyre, or very few drivers used the hard tyre, I should say. I think Sergio Perez ended up using the hard tyre briefly, which meant there wasn't as much information as drivers and teams normally expect. And that tends to lead to good racing as well, right? When Friday practice means no one gets the full picture.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been to races where Friday practice has effectively been rained out, and mm-hmm. then the race on Sunday in the dry has turned out to be quite a cracker. So when teams don't have enough data, definitely spices up the racing. And yeah, I mean, they just didn't have enough data on the hard tyre.
Yeah, and that fed into, as we'll talk about in a second, the decision-making around that first stop for Mercedes. One other thing I want to talk about in terms of Friday is Valtteri Bottas, who, you know, was looking thereabouts throughout the timesheet, but has taken another engine penalty this weekend. He's third in 4 weekends. It was his sixth new engine. It was just the internal combustion engine this weekend, but sixth change over the last so many weeks. This is interesting, not only in terms of strategies, we'll get to in a second, but as we get towards these last five rounds, you know, it's tightening up. The points are still very tight, but of course, every result just lands more heavily. Every punch is more painful as you have fewer rounds to make up for it. Reliability is playing a role in this championship, not only for Bottas, who keeps being sent to the back or further down the grid, he's not racing the way he wants, but every time it happens to Bottas, I guess it has the potential to happen to Lewis Hamilton. And I can't help but think that Mexico is coming up, which is a real engine punishing circuit. How concerning should it be? Well, it hasn't struck Hamilton yet. He's only taken one penalty. That this is happening in the background of his challenge.
Oh, it's definitely a concern because, I mean, look, when Verstappen took his engine penalty or power unit penalty in Russia, we knew Lewis would have to take one as well at some point. But that would have sort of evened out between the two title contenders. The fact that Lewis's challenge could be further hamstrung by what now appears to be an additional penalty. Mm-hmm. It is definitely a setback for him, or could be a setback for him if they do sort of opt for a new engine. Especially given that he's now even further behind Verstappen in the standings. There are no obvious sort of Mercedes tracks coming up, and you know, yeah, it's just going to be an additional sort of, it's additional work that he doesn't need to do. It's going to be costly at the business end of a season.
I think it's a really good way to put it, actually, is that, and this is not to talk down Lewis Hamilton's achievements, but he's often just had to be very good at what we already know he's very good at. Like, he just has to go out and be Lewis Hamilton fundamentally, and he would win championships. But this season, he's had so much work to do, hasn't he? Including in this race. He had to work to try to win this race, and often in novel ways. Some of the strategies, I mean, as you alluded to earlier, for example, in France, which he ultimately didn't win, in Spain, they had to go out and really actively win and work for these races. And you would ordinarily expect in those circumstances the challenger to crack, right? The challenger who hasn't been contending for a long time. But it feels as if over the course of this season, Mercedes, and even to an extent Lewis Hamilton, has been more prone to, cracking might be a big word, makes it sound like it's all over, but more prone to making the little errors or having the little weak spots might be a better way to describe it in this championship fight, and engines is proving one of them.
Yeah, I guess that's because, I guess this season is really the first season since the turbo hybrid era that they've been pushed this hard and so are therefore operating closer to the limit, both as a driver and as a team, and in terms of the machinery being operated closer to the limit as well. You know, I mean, I know they were pushed hard by Ferrari in 2017 and 2018, but Ferrari and Vettel's challenge petered out, and the sort of the last part of the season was a fairly easy walkover for Hamilton and Mercedes. But that's not been the case this year. It's almost as if Red Bull, and yes, they're very close, but on balance over the course of the season, if I was to look at it, it does appear that Red Bull have had the edge, and it's been Mercedes who've been sort of the challengers rather than the favorites, by very small margins. But yeah, so he's definitely having to operate closer to his own personal limit. The team are having to operate their machinery closer to the car's limit. So, and remember, with Red Bull and Verstappen, they've generally to take the fight to Mercedes over the last few years. Sure, they've only won a handful of races, but to do that, they've had to absolutely nail everything. They've had to put everything on the table and get everything right. So they're used to operating in that zone, so to say. Whereas Mercedes probably and Hamilton, after so many years of dominance, are not used to operating in that zone.
It will be interesting to see when we tally up all the points in a couple of months or a couple of weeks, a couple of months, either way, yeah, a couple of weeks, yeah. How all those things pan out. It'll go fast. That's all I'm saying, is it's going to go fast. Let's look at the race, because qualifying gave us kind of what we wanted to see, a very close qualifying session. Max Verstappen just won out over Lewis Hamilton, but much like the race itself, qualifying really came down to fundamentally two drivers. Yes, Sergio Perez was hampered a little bit by rain, I suppose, in that third sector, but it is really a two-horse race, and that's what we got in qualifying. The start, though, and this ended up being, I guess, important to the outcome. Whether or not it was important to Lewis Hamilton's chances of winning or not is an interesting question. Lewis Hamilton got the better start, took the apex at turn one, even muscled Max Verstappen out wide a little bit, which is, I guess, what we want to see, right? Everyone's talking about collision off the line. Mm. We kind of got one. Luckily, they both continued. Shout out as well to Sergio Perez here as well, who got very much out of the way of Max Verstappen, didn't he, out of turn two. Did not want second place, Sergio Perez.
Yeah, very compliant of Perez. But I mean, he's there to do a job. Mm-hmm. He's doing his job well. I honestly thought, you know, Verstappen and Hamilton would end up colliding, taking each other out, possibly at the mm-hmm. first corner, and Perez would come through and take a win in front of his sort of at one of his home races, which would have been mm-hmm. quite a magical win for him. But that didn't happen. Verstappen closed the door very aggressively on Lewis. Lewis then backed down and pushed him wide at the exit of turn one, and they continued. I mean, it's lucky for Verstappen that Perez was the car behind and proved to be compliant in giving him that position back, so to say, because if it would have been Leclerc or something, then Verstappen would have probably wrecked Verstappen's race.
It would have been very interesting, and good thing that there were curbs removed from the outside of turn one, I think I'm right in saying.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because potentially, and we have seen cars get damaged over the curbs exiting turn one in the past, so
yeah.
Could have been much worse for him. In the end, they both emerged unscathed, as you said. But weirdly, And while track position was exactly what Lewis Hamilton needed, and in fact, track position ended up being more important than I think most people thought in this race because of the heat leading to that degradation. When you follow another car, the degradation only gets worse in terms of tyres overheating. Track position was the only way Lewis Hamilton could win, but weirdly enough, put the initiative, or so it seemed, into Max Verstappen's hands as he was the following car. Lewis Hamilton struggling on those medium tyres early had a decision effectively forced upon him because he was leading, because he couldn't respond. He had to fundamentally stay out, perhaps against what was in his best interest, even if they didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think when you're the lead car, making that call is very difficult. How early do you pit? How late do you leave it? And then you're basically trying to second guess what the opposition is likely to do. And you're never going to be able to second guess what the opposition is going to do accurately, because the car behind can always do the opposite of the car in front. So, you know, it's second guessing is never going to work. Again, you don't want to come in too early. I mean, Verstappen came in incredibly mm-hmm. early for his first stop. And there was no way, I think, if you're the lead car, there's no way you're going to take that gamble and come in that early and give up track position. Also, remember that track position on those mediums, especially Verstappen comfortably had the measure of Hamilton. So mm-hmm. In the first stint. So while that track position did put Hamilton in sort of the did give Mercedes the lead driver dilemma, so if we can call it that. I don't think they would have had a chance to turn this or to take the fight to Verstappen the way they did strategically had Hamilton not had track position in the first stint, because I think Verstappen would have just disappeared off into the distance in that first stint. So it was a tough one. Track position played against him, but then it also put him in the position to and gave Mercedes the options that they then employed to take the fight to Verstappen later in the race.
Absolutely right. He needed that track position because, as it turned out, without the pace in that first stint, probably wouldn't have been in a position to challenge. And you'd have thought, assuming that Perez was third and Hamilton second, he'd have just suffered the same fate, but at the hands of Perez in a battle for second and third, which would have been much less edifying for him and for everyone. I think it would have been a much worse race. So I'm glad we got the outcome that we did, really. But this was the interesting part. It really, the race was decided in the first 13 laps, let's say, even if we didn't realise it. Of course, things could have happened differently in those last three laps, but everything was set in motion here because Max, as you said, came in very aggressively after 10 laps. Interesting that he chose not to do what I think we often see in Formula One when you've got a bit of an advantage but not enough to pass and the tyres are delicate, chose not to just hang back, get out of the wake of the car, let the race come to him, hope that Hamilton would either be forced into doing something he didn't want to do and then take the lead and run off in the distance. And I couldn't help but think that this was, and the race overall was, a little bit of a parallel in the opposite direction of the Bahrain Grand Prix, where this was Hamilton, admittedly from the lead, I think, if memory serves, but Hamilton stopping early in Bahrain when he to maintain track position fundamentally, to gamble and play with track position and dare the other driver to do the same. It was Verstappen who was taking this race on. And it's interesting as well because I feel like in the last couple of races we've seen these two teams kind of play safely because neither wants to lose a race because of how costly it is. But in this race we got the opposite. Red Bull Racing gambling with what would be long stints for the rest of the race, which were potentially dangerous, to win the race, not just to finish with points.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a massive gamble. Yes, of course, they probably could afford to gamble because even if they lost that position, yes, Hamilton would have probably got the lead back, but they had more to gain. I mean, Hamilton would have gotten the lead back in the championship, but not by that much. So they had more to gain and less to lose in that sense in terms of the points. And, you know, we've seen Red Bull do that when it's required. Red Bull sort of have not been afraid to take a gamble. You know, we know that with this team. Operationally, they've been very strong. I mean, they've won lots of races at the height of Mercedes' dominance by doing similar things like bold gambles and things like that. So, yeah, it was bold, but it worked in the end. It almost didn't, but I mean, it was one of those things where if Hamilton would have caught and passed them, then it would have been, they would have looked, it was like that. It was a tiny margin between looking like a hero and looking like a zero, I think. And Red Bull certainly ended up looking good. Verstappen ended up looking really good because that the stints he drove on those tires, pretty exceptional.
Now, the specific pit window between laps 10 and 13 in this case were absolutely crucial. And I remember we were talking during the race as well that it felt like Lewis Hamilton fundamentally got caught in a little bit of a no-man's zone, couldn't undercut Verstappen, obviously, because Verstappen had pulled that trigger first, but then opted not to run long. Now, his pace was pretty terrible in retrospect on the medium tyres. As soon as Verstappen came out on the hards, he was absolutely blitzing Hamilton, more than 2 seconds a lap at one point. But then, and this is where the teammate factor comes in, isn't it? That Sergio Perez was deployed to prevent Hamilton from running long and doing a different kind of offset strategy to the one he ultimately played. Or I guess it was the second half of the strategy he ultimately played because he did run long with the second stint. It was an important role for Perez to play. I like that Max Verstappen came on radio as well and told Red Bull to do it, even though I'm sure they were already planning on doing it, but he wanted to make sure. And then Hamilton responded. Now, I think if we look back at the lap times, Hamilton should have responded to Verstappen immediately to prevent him from losing so much time, right? Because when he rejoined after lap 13, it was 6.5 seconds. Took him a while to close that down on the hard tyre. But alternatively, do you think, I mean, should he have responded to Perez? Should he have tried to run his own race? Was there something in that? Because in the end, The time lost by pitting later got him nowhere. I think ultimately, I mean, it's a bit strong to say, but lost him the race, played a role in losing him the race. Was there anything to gain by staying out longer and attempting the strategy anyway?
No, I think, but, you know, Hamilton on that, on those mediums was just too slow. I mean, like you said, we were talking at that time and I didn't understand the logic of going just three laps longer. I mean, that's not enough to win him that tire offset. But ultimately, the way it panned out, it was about minimizing the time spent on the slower tire, which was the medium for Hamilton. I mean, he was absolutely struggling on that tire. And I think they did the right thing in hindsight. It was about building up a tire delta over the two pit stops rather than try and do it all in one pit stop. And it made more sense to build up that tire delta, a bigger tire delta over the second, in the build up to the second pit stop, rather than do it on the medium tires, which were far slower relative to Verstappen.
And it would have absolutely been the wrong decision. And they may not have known it, even if it wasn't, because what they didn't know, and this comes back into what we didn't know from Friday practice, was how effective the hard tire was on the Mercedes car. Had they known, they may even, who knows, gone the super aggressive strategy and undercut Verstappen in the first place, knowing they could depend on that hard tire. But the lack of knowledge meant not only were they not sure if it was the right tire to be on at the right time, but they didn't even know how long this first stint could be. And this is where it's a really interesting comparison between Hamilton and Verstappen at opposite ends of this race, because it was Hamilton's, I guess, being able to preempt the tyres might have been delicate, but he brought in these hard tyres so well that it set himself up for this great tyre offset, because the stint he ran on the hards was not insignificant. Even if the hards were doing really well, they were still degrading on virtually everybody's car.
Yeah, absolutely. He brought the tyres in well after both his stops, I think. He brought the hard tyres in really well after both his stops. I remember saying to you during the race, I don't see him working his way back into undercut range, but then he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way he sort of managed, eked out sort of the pace, over the second stint on the hard tires, his second race stint, his first stint on the hard tires, he did work himself back into undercut range, and that effectively, I guess, forced Red Bull into probably an earlier second stop than they would have liked, because again, they weren't sure how long that hard tire would go.
And this is where I want to draw that comparison between Hamilton and Verstappen, because whereas Hamilton had the opportunity to bring those tires in because his strategy was essentially set from lap 13. He knew what was going to be required. It could have been two very long stints. In the end, it was one especially long one and a slightly shorter one. But he knew he had that time to bring it in because he was playing a longer game. Verstappen's first stop on lap 10 was an aggressive second stint. That from lap 10 to lap 29, he was running close to flat out. Partly that was because he had to undercut Hamilton. He couldn't risk being overcut or anything like that. He had to pass Daniel Ricciardo on his out lap, and he thought he had to pass Charles Leclerc, but Leclerc ultimately pitted out of the way. He was absolutely flat out, very rapid, as we said, the first laps of that second stint. But that meant that those tyres degraded quite rapidly. I thought it was interesting afterwards that Christian Horner said there was almost no rubber left on them, or down to the canvas. I know Christian Horner likes an exaggeration. I'm sure there's a little bit of exaggeration there. But no doubt that was partly true, because those tyres were used very aggressively and his times did start to drop off as Hamilton closed within that undercut range. Two different approaches there. But then we flipped the role in the second stint. And what I thought is particularly interesting here is that Red Bull said after the race they weren't convinced that they were going to make it to the end of the race. How much of this was Verstappen at the wheel that commanded that second stint? Because had it been anything like the first stint, there's no way they would have made it at the end of the race because he did so many more laps. I thought this was such a almost Hamilton-esque drive for Verstappen in terms of whispering to those tyres in that second stint to get them through.
Yeah, exactly. Hamilton-esque is the perfect way to describe it, because Lewis has shown how to eke life out of tyres in the past. But I mean, that second stint Verstappen was, and you could see it in the gaps as well. I mean, I think Hamilton probably, once the gap started going down, I think Hamilton probably pushed, I mean, he brought the tyres in really well, but then he probably pushed a little too hard too soon. That possibly took the edge off his tyres once he got close to Verstappen, and then therefore reduced the delta that would be required to sort of catch him and pass him in dirty air. But yeah, Verstappen was phenomenal during that stint, I think. He was managing, you could see that from the lap times as well, and the gaps between him and Hamilton. He was managing that tire very well. He was very sort of composed, very chilled out at the front, mm-hmm. not getting flustered by Hamilton catching him. I think that was down to Verstappen's driving. Of course, the fuel loads and everything do also mm-hmm. make it easier to look after the tires, but he had to work for that.
Yeah, and I think specifically him, and this is not to detract from the team playing this strategy, because of course they played it because they knew it was possible, even if they thought it was unlikely, even if they thought there was too long a final stint. But I do want to compare this once again to Bahrain, because they were effectively opposites. It was Hamilton holding track position with a stint at the end that was longer than was ideal. And of course, we remember Verstappen chasing him, getting an opportunity to pass him. I think it was two laps to go, couldn't pull it off because he went wide, and we know how that ended. Hamilton won that Grand Prix. But in that race, it felt like Verstappen was in a rush to win. Of course, he was chasing him down. And I know it's a bit of an exaggeration to compare to say that Verstappen was, at the start of this year, anything like the Verstappen of his early career, where he was more petulant, where he didn't have the long game ability that he does now. But I do want to fast forward now to this race, where it feels like we're seeing, and this race in particular we saw, a really almost finished product of Verstappen, because he really made those decisions that made this race work more than just Red Bull Racing. It almost feels to me like he's getting back the win that he didn't manage in Bahrain, because all those pieces weren't in place.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Verstappen over the course of the season has matured so much as mm-hmm. a driver, and I think we saw that in his performance in Austin. I think That first race was also, there was a sense of, okay, let's make the most of it while we can, because mm-hmm. Mercedes is probably going to hit their stride and run away into the distance. So and there was that desire to sort of mark himself out as a title challenger for the first time in his career. I mean, mm-hmm. we all knew he's a future world champion, but you know, you want to mark yourself out points wise as a title challenger early on in the season. And I guess they sort of felt, I guess he at that time was also more, again, I don't want to use the word impetuous, because he is not the impetuous mm-hmm. Verstappen of his sort of growing up days. But yes, he was probably hungrier to sort of prove himself and to turn those opportunities into wins, because they probably thought Mercedes would run off into the distance as the season progressed. So you want to make the most of your chances. I think now as the season has gone on, he's calmed down. He's generally had the edge. He's had the stronger car. He's won more races. So, you know, you have to think that's settled him. He believes in himself. He doesn't have to prove to anyone that he's a championship challenger anymore. You know, we're coming to the end of the season. He's ahead on the points. And I think he's generally now, he's got that validation from himself, from within probably, and that's settled him a little bit, because even when he's been behind in the championship, it's not generally been down to mistakes that he has made or reliability issues and things like that. It's been down to things like the tire blowing up in Baku. Mm-hmm. It's been down to sort of those big hits that he has taken in the championship rather than any mistakes that he has made.
And it's interesting to consider as a challenger as well, and a challenger who has been developing as a driver this year, as you've said, not because he had a long way to go as a driver, but because inevitably you learn something in a championship campaign when you're really up against it, and a campaign with the flashpoints like the one we had in this season, that it does feel like he's almost been the one to make fewer mistakes. I feel like the mistakes he's made have been not errors of driving, but more of judgment. Like, as much as it wasn't his fault in Silverstone, and the stewards agreed, I think a more experienced driver wouldn't have put themselves in that situation with a points advantage he had, for example.
Yeah.
In Italy, it was probably a little bit ambitious, but he's not making mistakes on track, for example, in this race where he's being pursued or where he's pursuing other drivers. And it's interesting that it's the challenger that feels to me anyway like he's having a cleaner campaign overall.
Oh, definitely. Definitely appears to be so. He just seems so much more assured in that car, in racing situations, in, you know, when he's out at the front. I mean, you won't see him making... That's why I'm kind of surprised by... He doesn't seem to be operating as close to his limit as Hamilton does.
Mm.
I mean, Hamilton seems to sort of, he seems closer to his edge, his own personal edge, than Verstappen does. And yeah, this we've seen a lot of I would say this has been an uncharacteristic season from Hamilton. Uncharacteristic in the sense of what we saw last year, the year before, and 2018 and 17. But I guess that's because I guess we're used to seeing that sort of serene Hamilton because he's not been challenged, and now that you know he's not had as clean a season under threat from Verstappen as he has in the past. So
it'll be great fodder for people who will ask at the end of the season or dice up this season how much was car and how much was driver in this campaign in terms of deciding what we hope will be a pretty fine points margin. Is Hamilton carrying too much of the Mercedes challenge? Or how is this balanced out? It's going to be an interesting question.
Yeah, and I think one thing to sort of... I would have thought a seven-time world champion would have been able to offer a greater challenge to Verstappen. It's almost like he's taken it in his stride without any sort of sense of... he's just sort of, I'm just fighting another driver. It doesn't seem to be, I'm taking on a seven-time world champion.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting like that, isn't it? It seems to me like he's a driver who feels... no pressure, which, again, for a young guy, is so interesting. And as a final note on the front-running battle, we've mentioned Valtteri Bottas only briefly, and for good reason. He started ninth with yet another Mercedes engine penalty, as we mentioned, and he couldn't make progress through the field early on, which means he never really got into touch with the front-running battle. Compare that to Perez, who forced Hamilton's hand at the first pit stop, as we said. You can't help but wonder what could have been for Hamilton's victory chances had Bottas been in Verstappen's pit window at around lap 29 when he made that second stop, whether that would have prevented Red Bull Racing and Verstappen from being able to go aggressive with that second stop and force Hamilton into that chase. It just shows again how valuable the teammates can be in this championship battle and how Mercedes' unreliability is hindering it, not just for the sake of unreliability, but because it counts out one driver in these battles. So that's the way this race ultimately panned out. It was Max Verstappen withheld the challenge from Lewis Hamilton 1.3 seconds in the end. Hamilton never quite close enough, never with the advantage in performance enough to launch a move. So we just got this exciting ending, but ultimately no attempt. And of course, that's 12 points now at the front of the drivers' standings. Let's just wrap up a couple of other quick storylines before I let you go. One was the battle for third in the constructors' standings, which is hotting up in a way I think we probably didn't expect in the middle of the season when it looked like McLaren was going to run away with it. Ferrari's taken a step forward in the last couple of weekends, perhaps in all areas except one, which tends to be, and you and I have talked about this plenty of times in this podcast, and elsewhere, not as polished in pit stop strategy. They got the strategy more or less right for Carlos Sainz, who fell behind Daniel Ricciardo on the first lap in a great battle. At the second pit stop window, he was within undercut range, had the undercut time available to him, but a dodgy pit stop, right rear. Now, every team is susceptible to these, but it does seem to happen a lot to Ferrari, doesn't it? And ultimately cost them not just the points for fifth, but ultimately made him vulnerable to Bottas at the end of the race.
Yeah, I think it was a... It was one that got away from Ferrari, to be honest. They didn't maximize it at all. That start was really exciting with the two McLarens taking on the Ferrari, and you know. But I think after that, like where Sainz could have undercut, I think after the second stops, I was surprised that sort of the order stayed similar. I mean, of course, he had a slower stop and everything, but it was basically the order remained unchanged in that it was Ricciardo, Sainz and Norris. And then of course, he then got passed by Bottas in the end, who finally made an impression on the race in some way. but yeah, I think I don't know how Ferrari just seems to find a way to not maximize their races strategically. So there's another example of that.
It is another example. McLaren tried to double stack. Well, they did double stack Ricciardo and Norris to try and take advantage of the slow stop. Ricciardo did stay ahead. Norris wasn't quite close enough to take advantage of that. He had an unusually muted weekend, did Lando Norris. One or two other drivers as well that are worth highlighting here. I want to touch on Sebastian Vettel because we don't get to talk about him all that much. He's had a generally kind of quiet season. He was one of the few drivers to use the medium tyre predominantly. Both sets used. He stopped on lap 17 and lap 38 and ended the race on the hard compound. Started 18th is why I want to emphasise this. 18th to the points. 18th with an engine penalty into the points. Every now and then we're getting these glimpses of races of great Vettel races. And okay, this wasn't great in the sense that he, you know, scored massive points. He did overtake a lot of cars. In fact, he's leading the overtaking award that Formula One has instituted recently. But this was a Vettel race in the sense that he just had everything under control. And it's a shame we don't see this more often at the front, because to use those tyres in the way he did, used tyres, used medium tyres, unfavoured compounds in this race, was just vintage Vettel, really.
Yeah, it was very Red Bull Vettel. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people might think that's an exaggeration, given it was only for the sort of the small points being finishes. But it was, in terms of how controlled a race he drove, it was a very Red Bull Vettel race, where he would always sort of, you know, leading from the front, leading from pole position, he always drove those very controlled races. Mm-hmm. Those became like his hallmark during the Red Bull days. And it's nice to see him sort of rediscovering some of his mojo, because, you know, it's like, how can a driver of that caliber, it's not like he just forgets how to drive, or mm-hmm. it's obviously it's a head game, ultimately, Formula One. And it's nice to see him sort of, and it's a confidence game. And it's nice to see him show us flashes of that older Vettel ability again. It's sad that it's only for the point, it's sort of the small points being finishes for now. But yeah, I think it's definitely these sorts of drives will definitely go a long way towards building his confidence back up, which is what it's all about, I think, for Vettel.
Hopefully that is the case and we see more of him next year in a car that might be, fingers crossed, a little bit better for him. And as a final note, I want to touch on Fernando Alonso. Didn't finish the race, retired with a cracked rear wing failure, a victim of the bumps of this circuit, or perhaps the curbs, because he was racing a lot over and over the curbs and off the track and all sorts, spending a lot of time on team radio. He ran a three-stop strategy, or it was his intention, had he made it to the end of the race. A deliberate three-stop strategy. We don't often get those. Mm. Normally, it's an accidental three-stop strategy for problems. And it looked like he might have been good to score points, except for these fights with the Alfa Romeo cars. Now, I bring this up for a specific reason, not just because they were fighting a lot, but it's part of this campaign Fernando has in terms of the rules. He was upset that some of the stewards' rules, to his mind, were inconsistent about passing on and off the track. He made some passes off the track he had to give back. He wasn't happy about that, but ultimately lost a lot of time as a result of that, of these ambitious moves. Mm. I don't want to say we're seeing the Alonso, the frustrated Alonso, because I don't get that sense at all. Certainly not the McLaren level frustrated Alonso, because that's on another level completely. But I can't help but feel that there's the frustration the car has been deeply inconsistent this season, and this thing he's got about the rules at the moment. It feels to me, the rear wing aside, that may have happened anyway, but that he sort of cost himself points by getting caught up in this mess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it's almost like, yes, he had that sort of argy-bargy moment with Raikkonen, and then it's almost as if when he passed Giovinazzi, he did it the way he did it, by running wide and off track to prove a point. And he didn't give the place back until he was told to, where it was a fairly obvious, and that probably cost him time, because he had to slow down that much more to sort of, you know. So I think, you know, Fernando seems to think that the Formula One rule makers are out to get him, or the media is out to get him, or whatever. But that's not the case. I mean, I don't remember him being penalized, for example, for his very blatant drive through the runoff area at turn one, because he did it by the book. He did it following the rules, and he came out behind the driver. He sort of was Ricardo, I think it was, when he went into braking for turn one. But yeah, it's almost like he's trying to prove a point, and it's almost like he's trying to pick a fight where he doesn't need to, and not just on the track, but off it. I mean, what's the point of it?
Yes, it is interesting. I mean, it's been a frustrating season, I think, for him, because the signs of progress are not quite there with the car. Maybe next year we'll have a smoother running for Fernando Alonso, and we'll see him at his best as well.
Maybe somewhere it does sort of grate a little bit that Esteban Ocon's won a race in that car.
Yes.
Of course, it was the circumstances and all of that, and Fernando played a huge role in helping deliver that win. But somewhere at the end of the season, it's looking like Esteban Ocon's going to have a win recorded against his name in this car, and Fernando's not. And that probably grates a little bit somewhere, I guess.
Undoubtedly, I think, for Fernando Alonso, that is the case. That were the key talking points from an interesting United States Grand Prix, particularly in terms of the championship. And Abhishek, I've been wrapping up all of our episodes with this question. Of course I am, because it's not often I get to ask it. 5 races to go, 12 points between them. Who do you think is going to win it, and why?
I'm so tempted to use the Kimi get out of jail card and say the one with most points. But I think it's going to be Verstappen.
It's a 50-50 call.
I mean, barring any sort of massive reliability or driver error, I think it's going to be Verstappen simply because he's got a 12-point lead now. There's no obvious track coming up that we have a couple of unknowns, of course, in Qatar and Saudi Arabia, which could go either way. But other than that, I don't think there's any obvious problem track for Red Bull coming up. And also, Brazil, Mexico are tracks they've done well on in the past. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, and also remember, Hamilton could probably have to take another penalty, So I think it's the odds are stacked against Hamilton. Never discount a 7-time world champion,
mm-hmm.
but never discount Max Verstappen as well. And the odds are very much in his favor at the moment.
I can't wait to find out how it ends. Abhishek, a pleasure to talk about the United States Grand Prix. Thanks so much for joining me.
Likewise. Thank you, Michael.
It feels almost useless to try to divine a form guide from the second half of the season. The reality is, these two cars and two drivers are so closely matched that tiny decisions, or moments of indecision, are altering the outcomes of races week to week. Some Red Bull Racing strongholds are coming up, but in 2021, it feels like anything is possible. Thanks very much to Abhishek for joining me. The Strategy Report is powered by Apex Race Manager, the mobile race strategy simulator. Download Apex Race Manager for free on iOS and Android devices. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report with Google, Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app to ensure you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, please leave us a rating and a review to help spread the word. You can also find us on social media. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast. Special thanks to Ben Loke from Bloke Designs for the show artwork, and our theme music is by Simon Hosford. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you next week for a preview of the Mexican, Brazilian, and Qatari Grand Prix.